Morning, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. Today, I would like to discuss with you a captain's responsibility for his ship. If we look at Perek Vav in Sefer Bereishis, chapter 6 in Genesis, verses 5 through 12, Sukkim Hay through Yudbet, we're going to notice that there's a difference between Noah and the people he lives with. If you'll read along with me in source number 1, I believe it's not going to be that hard to find the differences. Vayar Hashem ki raba ra'at ha'adam ba'aretz, v'chol yetzer makshava libo rak ra kol hayom. God saw that the evil of man in the land was great, and all of the thoughts of his heart was evil the whole day. Vayinachem Hashem ki asat ha'adam ba'aretz. God regretted that he made man. Vayitatzev al libo, and he was very sad about it. Vayomer Hashem emchet ha'adam asher barati ma'al pnei adama. Me'adam ha'beima ad remes vadof ha'shamayim ki nichamti ki asitim. I'm going to wipe man that I created off the face of the earth, says God, from man to animal, from crawly creature to bird in the sky, because I regret that I created them. Pasuk Chet, third line, last five words. V'noach, but Noach. Vavs don't always have to be conjunctive. They can be oppositional. But Noach. Matzachin be'enei Hashem. Noach found pleasure, was found grace in God's eyes. So before we even go any further, it's very clear that in how many psukim do we already see that Adam Ba'aretz is good or bad? Shout it out when you know it. Bad. And Noah clearly is much better. Right. Okay. Now there's a Parsha break, because this begins Parshas Noach, Pasuk Tet, verse 9. Eila toldot Noach. These are the generations, or according to the Ibn Ezra and Parshas Vayeshev, the stories of Noach. Noach ish sadik tamim haya. Noach was a righteous man. He was pure. Bidorotav in his generations. Et ha'elokim hitalech Noach. Noach walked with God. V'yoleid Noach shlosha banim et shem et cham v'yafet. Noach gave birth to three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafet. V'tishachet ha'aretz lifnei ha'elokim. The land was corrupted before God. V'timalei ha'aretz chamas. The land was filled with corruption or robbery. Vayar Elokim et ha'aretz v'hine nishchata. God saw the land and it was corrupted. Ki hishchit kol basar et darko al ha'aretz. Because every creation had corrupted or destroyed its path on the earth. You'll notice that in Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, the shoresh of the word hishchit shows up three times, right, in two psukim. That's clearly emphasizing the word. God feels that it is very destroyed, very corrupted. It's a foreshadowing to what he's about to do. Well, he already said it, but you know what I mean. And clearly, the way that God feels that the world has turned is very, 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 very bad. And compared to Pasuk Tet, Noah, compared to everybody else, is very good. There's a very clear gap between Noah and everybody else. And what I'd like to discuss today is his relationship with everybody else. Just because you're different than your neighbors doesn't mean you don't get along with them. And just because you're different than somebody else doesn't mean you can't have a very good, strong relationship with them. It's not muvan me'elav. It's not obvious that just because two people are different that they can't get along or have a very strong relationship. How many times do we know the euphemism opposites attract? So what I'd like to explore is what was, in fact, their relationship. So I'd like to explore it through the phrase in Pasuk Tet, Et HaElokim Hitalech Noach. The reason why I believe that the Mefarshim hit upon that phrase as the clue or as the opening to try to figure out how Noach related to them is because we have a lot of adjectives about Noach, let's say, but it's one of the first or only, not the only, but one of the only verbs that discusses what Noach did or who he was with. We have at the end of Pasuk Chet, Noach Matza, he found favor in God's eyes, but it's somewhat passive. And even though it's reflexive, we have he walked with God. So now we have something that he did. So the Mefarshim used that as an opening to figure out who was he hanging out with. So if you look with me in source number 2, Radak uses that as an opening to figure out, okay, so who is Noach hanging out with? Et ha'elokim hitalech Noach. Davek hayabo. He clung to him. Chol drachav lishmo. All of his paths were for God's name. V'zeh haya koach gadol misichlo. This took great intellectual power. Shehit gaber al tivo. That he overcame his natural tendencies. Ki hu haya bedor rishaim v'chamasim. Because he lived in a generation of evil and corrupt and thieving men. V'lo lamad v'maseim, and he did not learn from their ways. V'lo hitbodeid v'avodat hakel elahu levado, and he isolated himself in his worship of God. He was alone. As far as Radak was concerned, how did Noach relate to his neighbors? He chose to have nothing to do with them. Okay. Let's see what Abarbanel thinks about that. Source number 3. V'hayaze lefi she'et ha'elokim hitalech Noach, rotse lomar, what does those words mean? She'im heyot shedar betoch resha'im, because he lived amongst evil men, lo halach baderech itam, he didn't walk with them, aval nitchaber v'nitbak el ha'elokim, he cleaved and was close with God. Lo nifrad mimenu. He never separated from him. Kol yamav, his whole life. Milshon achrei Hashem elokeichem telchu v'oto tirau. After God you should walk. Clearly Abarbanel and Radak are in agreement. Noach isolated himself. He had nothing to do with his generation. Okay, that's one way to go about the people that you live with. Now, Chazal noticed that this language, Et ha'elokim hitalech Noach, reminds them of a similar phrase by Abraham. Anyone remember the language? You're all very, very learned women. Anyone remember? Yeah. Exactly. In Bereshis, Perek Yudzayin, Hashem says to Avraham, Ani Kel Shakai, I am God, Hitalech Lifanai, walk before me, Veheye Tamim, and be pure, be innocent. So how many words do we have in common there? Hitalech Lifanai, God says, walk before me. If you look quickly at Pasuk Tet, Elkim Hitalech, Vehege Tamim, and you have the word Tamim. Chazal were very close readers of the text. They couldn't help but notice how similar they were. And Chazal, the minute they notice a parallel, and they see they have to do a comparison. So if you look with me in source number 4, let's see what the Midrash says. Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Mashal Lissar Shahayalo Shnei Banim. You can compare it to a minister who had two sons, Echad Gadol v'Echad Katan. One was the older son, and one was the younger son. Amar la Katan, halachimi, v'amar la Gadol, ba v'halach lefanai. Kach Avraham, shaya kochol yafeh. התהלך לפני והיה תמים. אבל נוח, שהיה כוחו רע, את האלוקים התהלך נוח. The Midrash is noticing that even though there are similarities in the two psukim, the one difference is the fact that by Noah it says et ha'elokim. Et can mean, it's not just an object marker, it can mean with. Noah walked with God. When God spoke to Abraham in Perek Yizayin, he said, walk before me. And when they do the comparison and they find all the similarities, they notice that one difference. And the conclusion that they draw from that difference is the level that they see between Noah and Abraham. And you can see that from the way that the Radak and the Abarbanel understand Noah's choice of how to live. Abraham was the older son who clearly was confident, who had clearly absorbed God's way of life and could be independent. And therefore his father said to him, walk before me. The father knew that his son, Abraham, had absorbed God's lessons, God's way of life, and he could confidently walk in front of him and would have no problems. Noach's the younger son, who still needs his father's hands clasped with him. He's not ready to walk alone. He's not ready to leave his dad. He wants his dad to protect him. He wants his dad to still be with him. He doesn't know what's out there yet. And if his dad's not there with him, he's not sure that it's going to be okay. And that's why it says, Et ha'elokim hitalech Noach. He walked with God. And I believe, knowing that Midrash, because of course Radak and Abarbanel knew the Midrash, they understood that he isolated himself and clung to God and didn't feel safe and didn't feel strong enough to have anything to do with his generation. The Maggid of Mezrich had an image for this that I think we'll all appreciate, or at least I appreciate it, so you have to hear it, which is that by isolating himself, he was on a certain level already in an ark before the flood ever started, because he completely had nothing to do with the rest of the world already before the flood even started. Okay. The question is, okay, it's a choice. We're not supposed to judge, but that's what we're going to do today anyway. Luckily for us, the rabbis and the mafarshim did it already, so it's okay. And hopefully we have something to learn from it. Let's figure out, is it okay that he isolated himself? I know you all know, like, no, it's not. He was supposed to help them, whatever. So clearly what she got to say is going to be boring. It's only 10 to 11. So hopefully I have something a little bit more to share with you. Or, more importantly, is there a way to understand why he chose to isolate himself? So clearly the Midrash thinks that he didn't have the confidence for it. But can we get a little bit more insight or analyze him a little bit deeper and understand if there's something more to it than that? And if so, is there something that you and I can take from that, considering, not that I'm disparaging anybody, the company that we keep in America today? So the first thing that I'd like to think about is the fact that when you think about the fact that God regretted that he created man on earth, and that's why he wanted to wipe everybody out, and he wanted to start anew, it's interesting to note that God's reaction after the flood was what? Did God think that the flood had worked? What's the message of the rainbow? Is God ever going to wipe out the earth again? No. Did God think that wiping out everybody and starting again works? No. God said in Paraklet Pasuk Chaf Aleph, when Noach and his family came out of the ark, after Noach brought his first korban, Hashem said, Lo osif lekalel od et adama bavur ha'adam. I'm never going to curse the earth again because of man. Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra me'urav. Because the fact of the matter is, the yetzer of man, the inclination of man, the heart of man, is evil from his youth. So what's the point? The reality is, man's always going to sin. And there's no point in wiping everybody out and starting all over again, because the reality is, when I start all over again, inevitably, what's going to happen? Man's going to sin again. And this spontaneous wiping everybody out in one fell swoop and like starting all over again in a flash is not the solution. What's the solution that God chose instead? Tshuva, which is a more drawn out process, a process of reflection, a process where man has a chance to improve his ways. Because just wiping everybody out and starting all over again, it's a process that never works and it's just going to keep on repeating itself. Because the reality is, man is just going to keep on sinning. So, and this is an idea that Rav Soloveitchik discusses in his book, Abraham's Journey. That on a certain level, Hashem realized the flood didn't fix anything. And everything was going to happen in a slower way. So maybe we could extrapolate from that idea and say that Noah just didn't see the point. In other words, they were really bad. The word that the Pasuk used in Pasuk Hay in source number one was Rabah Ra'at Ha'aretz. It wasn't just bad. It was really bad, okay? It had reached a point where you couldn't imagine it getting any worse. And maybe Noah, by the time he was born and by the time he arrived, he just felt it was a lost cause. So at this point, I'm not judging him. I'm just trying to analyze and get some insight into understanding why did he choose to isolate himself. He chose to cling with God completely because they were just so bad that there was just like nothing that he thought he could do for them. Rabbeinu Bechaye writes it in a way that if you use the model of Abraham, when he prayed on behalf of Sodom, he kept on trying to say, from a judicious point of view, you can't kill good people with bad people. What if they're 50 good men? What if they're 40 good men? Ultimately, what was the lowest number? What if they're 10 men? So Rabbeinu Bechaye makes the assumption that if Noach didn't try to do anything, and if he isolated himself, then Rabbeinu Bechaye makes the assumption that what did Noach not find? Even 10 men. So maybe the first approach that we could possibly take is that Noah felt that they were a lost cause. Okay, that would be approach number one. There was a huge gap. He isolated himself, and he did it because he thought they were a lost cause. A second approach is that Noah really wanted to influence them positively. He knew that that's what he was supposed to do. He understood that considering the impending doom, that's what you're supposed to try to do. But he knew himself. He was 600 years old. And at a certain point, as I try to tell my students in high school, as young women, it's their job now to start to learn who they are and start to learn their styles and figure out who they are and figure out to differentiate themselves from other people. And hopefully by 600, granted, and I'm not, for a second, let's not joke, okay, because their lifespans were different. Okay, but hopefully by 600, even in their lifespans, he had a sense of who he was. So basically, the Shem Mishmuel, okay, Rav Shmuel Bornstein from Eastern Europe, early 20th century, the Shem Mishmuel said, Noach knew himself. He wasn't a strong enough person, okay? And he didn't think he was strong enough to go out there. And he didn't think he was strong enough to go up against them. Okay, they were a tough crew. And it's not just anybody, they could go out there. I mean, they were thieves, they were gangs. I don't know what they were like, but I don't know that just anybody's going out there and starting up with them. And the Shem Mishmuel says he wanted to, but he just didn't think that he was strong enough to do it. Along the same line of thinking, but on a different angle, the Divrei Shaul, Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, 19th century Poland, who's probably a little bit more famous for his Shelot V'Tshuvot in the Sefer Shoel U'Meshiv, said that Noach knew himself. He just wasn't good at persuading people. He just didn't have that kind of talent. Avram clearly did. Sarah clearly did. A lot of us are very familiar with that Rashi, Et HaNefesh Asu Becharan, that they converted a lot of people, right? Avram in the tent wanting to get people out to God. At a certain point, I would assume he had some success if he kept doing it. Otherwise, it's even more impressive. But the bottom line is, he knew himself. I mean, on a certain level, if you think about people who do Kiruv, not everybody's supposed to do Kiruv. Not everybody's cut out for it. And when you think about all the things in the field, not everyone's supposed to be a doctor. Not everybody's supposed to be an engineer. Everybody's got talent. Everybody's got a skill set. And Noach may have been very disappointed. And again, we're not judging. Like, maybe we could say, you're supposed to try anyway. My God, there's a flood. Everyone's going to die. Step up to the plate, dude. But he evaluated the situation and said, I don't have the skill set for this. I can't persuade people. I don't have those talents. And therefore, he didn't try. So he didn't have anything to do with them, and he stuck with Hashem. So, two ways of trying to understand his approach. One, a more negative approach. He thought they were a lost cause. A second approach, a much more positive way of looking at it. He really wanted to, but he just didn't think he could do it. A third approach is, I think, a little bit of a different way of looking at things. And what I'd like to do, and this is something I love doing, and I hope it's new for you like it's new for me, which is taking a Rashi we've all learned a lot of times and possibly getting a new insight on it. So if you'll look with me in source number 5, I'd like to take a Rashi a lot of us have looked at before. If you haven't seen it before, no worries, that's why you're here. And I'd like to delve into it a lot deeper. It's on Pasuk Tet, source number 5. Bidorotav. Yesh mirabotenu dorshim oto l'shevach. Some of our rabbis expound upon it in the form of praise. Kol shekein. She'ilu haya bedor tzadikim, haya tzadik yoter. V'yesh shedorshim oto l'gnai. And some expound upon it in a negative way. L'fi doro haya tzadik. Ilu haya bedoro shel Avraham, lo haya nechshav l'klum. He was a righteous man in his generation, but if he had been in the generation of Avraham, he wouldn't have been thought of much. Now, there are a lot of different places that this Rashi could have come from. If you look in the Torah Chaim, they footnote it and say that it came from Bracious Rabbah. But I'd like to focus on the fact that it could have come from source number 7, if you'll turn to page 2. From Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Chet Amud Aleph, the Gemara Sanhedrin 108a, Ish Tzadik Tamim Haya B'dorotav, Amar Rabbi Yochanan B'dorotav V'lo B'dorot Acharim, Reish Lakish Amar B'dorotav Kol Shekein B'dorot Acharim. There's a machlokes from that famous Chavrusa pair, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion Lignai. Okay, in his generation he was great. Any other generation? Nothing. Reish Lakish was of the opinion that in his generation, whatever, but in another generation he would have done better. Now, the fact of the matter is that I've always learned that Rashi, and I never really thought that much about it. I always learned it, I always knew it, and I always said it. And when I started to delve into it a little bit further, I came across the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, Rav Eliyahu Dessler, who, born in 1892, passed away in 1953, started out in Lithuania, ended up in London Gateshead, and eventually became the Mashiach Ruchani in Panovich. And what he noted was that if you think about it a little bit further, okay, they don't actually disagree about Noah. I'm not so good about this kind of stuff, so it took me a minute to figure it out. You could be better and you got it already. They don't actually agree. They both agree that Noah was mediocre. What they're disagreeing about is the word bedorotav. In other words, if you look at Rashi, back in source number 5 for a moment, focus on the fourth word in Rashi. Yesh mi rabotenu dorshim oto l'shevach. They're talking about that word. They're expounding that word. What they are disagreeing about is the implication and significance of bedorotav. There's no machloket, there's no dispute about his level. He was mediocre. What they dispute is whether he could have done any better. Rav Yochanan says, no. Rav Yochanan says, no. Okay? Where do we get that from? Because all the Michtav Me'Eliyahu says is, do you realize they're not actually disagreeing about his level? They're just disputing about the word, whether the Torah is trying to say something negative about him or something positive about him. Are they trying to emphasize his greatness? If he had been in a better generation, he would have been even better. Or is the Torah trying to emphasize his mediocrity? If he had been in a better generation, he would have been nothing. That's what they're disputing. The Levush HaOra, a super commentary, or as we say in my school, super commentary, which is a commentary on a commentary. Rashi is the commentary that has the most super commentaries, which is not surprising because his comments are so succinct. I'll never forget when I started learning the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who put out a sicha on Rashi every single week. He was a huge Rashi scholar. And thank God that Chabad, 10, 20 years ago, started publishing his sichot, first of all, online, right? One of the positives of the web. But also there's a 5-volume set where they have a sicha for every parsha. And you can, I gave a shiur here a year or two ago about Leah and Dina, which was a sicha of the Rebbe, where he learns Rashi in depth. And he has a book, Klalei Rashi, where he goes through, and I'll never forget when the first thing he said is Rashi wrote his parish for a 5-year-old, where he assumed that the 5-year-old would naturally have questions, so all he did was write the answers. So all I can say is when we talk about Yiridat HaDorot, the generations get weaker and weaker. Clearly the five-year-olds in 1040 to 1105 were on quite a high level. I also think that that comes from the idea of Ben Chamesh Lemikra from Pirkei Avos, but nevertheless, he really thought you only needed to write the answers, and considering how much time I spend in my classes trying to figure out the questions, they were clearly on a very high level. Okay, so I don't know if everyone heard what she said. How can I use the word mediocre? It's not right. He called him a tzaddik. Fair question. So let me clarify. I think that, so let me quote the Levush Hora, who doesn't address that question, but based on what he says, not addressing this question, maybe I can answer that. Okay. So once the Rav Eliyahu Dessler and the Miftam Eliyahu says, that they're not disagreeing about his madrega, his level, they're disagreeing about whether bedorotav, which seems superfluous, it's unnecessary, hence Rashi's comment, is a positive or a negative. The Levush Ha'ora, who's commenting on Rashi, he feels that even if Noach had lived in a generation of more righteous people, they wouldn't have had a positive effect on it. In other words, he's understanding Rav Yochanan to say, not that, in other words, what Rav Yochanan is basically saying is, not just that if he had lived in Avram's generation, he would have been thought nothing, the Levush Ha'ora feels that what Rav Yochanan is saying in the Gemara is that if he had lived in Avram's generation, they wouldn't have even been able to influence him to do any better. He wouldn't have even improved. That's the disagreement between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish is like, they would have made him better. Rav Yochanan's like, they wouldn't have. He would have lived amongst them and it wouldn't have been any better. That's the Levush Ha'ora's opinion. Now, to answer your question, hold on, I have the Levush Ha'ora here. I don't want to misquote it. The Levush Ha'ora, I'll only spend a moment on it, and then maybe I'll talk to you afterwards. But basically, the Levush Ha'ora does a comparison of Noach and Avraham and the fact that there's a pasuk that says Noach matzachein, and about Avraham umatzata et livavo, and how by Avraham it's active, God found Avraham neman, but Noach matzachein, not that God found him pleasing, and therefore the Levush Ha'ora feels that he was a tzaddik, but not necessarily the best tzaddik. So that's where my answer is coming from, but we can discuss it further. But it's a fair question. Yes? Thank you so much. I was going to say that. What she said is she finds it fascinating because Reish Lakish was the king of the thieves, and he started out there, and he became Reish Lakish. What I find fascinating is his point of view perfectly resonates with his life. It's Rav Yochanan's that doesn't, because Rav Yochanan's the one who saw the potential in Reish Lakish. He's the one who said, Chelecha lo'raisa, you should use your strength for Torah. I mean, who else would see in the king of robbers he was about to attack him and says, you shouldn't attack me, you should be a great Torah scholar. Yeah, okay. And Rav Yochanan's the one who seems to think about Noach, that even if he had been in a great generation, they wouldn't have been able to influence him. That's the part that surprises me. So I haven't figured that out yet.
So Rav Yochanan is saying that God's nature was not
Oh, that's very nice. What this young woman is saying is that Reish Lakish is interpreting it that way, possibly because he feels that nature versus nurture, I was able to, if I'm reflecting back correctly, that just like I was able to overcome with a positive influence, so Noach with a positive influence could have. And Rav Yochanan is saying not everybody can. And that you were able to do it, just because you were able to do it, not everybody can do it. Very interesting, thank you. Okay, thank you so much. So let's sum up for a second. Insight, why was he isolating himself? Lost cause. He wanted to, but he didn't have the skill set to do it. Third thing that we're doing is trying to understand a new way of looking at the Rashi. We haven't figured out how that fits in yet. So, Bidoro Tav, what's his relationship with his generation? So, clearly, in terms of his generation, they both agree that his level was, I don't know, is there a better word than mediocre? A tzaddik, I don't remember the lashon that the Levusha Ora uses. Regular tzaddik versus awesome tzaddik. It actually is something like that, but it's so small, and I'm actually too old to like find it fast. Anyway, so bygones. The fact of the matter is, taking it in a development, Rav Dessler says there's no dispute. They both agree on his level. Levush Ora develops it and says, Reish Lakish says, I think that if he was in a better generation, I think they would have had a positive influence. And Rav Yochanan says, nope, I think if he was in a better generation, they wouldn't have even influenced him. Now, what I'd like to bring in is a different perspective on him amongst his contemporaries, based on a sicha of Rav Lichtenstein. And Rav Lichtenstein believes, I only read the English translation off the VBM, that in fact Noah was who he was because they were bad. In other words, why would Noah, let's say, taking Rav Yochanan's view of the Levush Ha'ora one step further, even if he had been in a generation of good people, they wouldn't have helped him. So why? So let's take Rav Lichtenstein, who says, because he was good, because he lived amongst bad people. We, have heard this kind of idea, meaning he was strong in contrast to them. He got his strength by being amongst people he needed to fight against. In other words, I have students like that, let's say, when they're choosing colleges. Some choose colleges where everybody is from, and they're going to be in a from environment because they don't want influences. And there's some who find that they're frommer when they are around people who aren't from, because it helps them be clearer about their identity, know who they are, and they have to fight for what they believe in. For some kids, that totally weakens them, and they don't want to have to, choose or worry about it. And for some kids, having to fight for that or see the other thing and then fight for it and choose for it is so empowering for them. And what Rav Lichtenstein argues is that that's Noah. He found that living amongst them helped him define who he was. He then rejected them and isolated himself and clung to God only. Why wouldn't he have been better if he had lived with a generation of better people? Because his whole religious experience was based on reacting against the bad people. So based on Rav Yochanan's point of view, according to the Levush Ha'ora, he couldn't have lived in a generation of bad people. And where can you see a support for this idea? In Perek Tet, when he's out of the Teva. He's out of the Teva. And there's nobody else around. And what happens to him? Is he doing well, or is he doing not so well? What is everybody so upset about what he does? What does he plant? Grapes! Seedless, red or green? I shouldn't make fun. The bottom line is everyone's so upset. Why not grain? Why not something smarter? But forget the vineyard. He gets drunk. I am going to talk to you later. The fact of the matter is, they're very upset. I'm not trying to dismiss you. I hear you. But the bottom line is, even if you want to have a drink or two, whatever, I'll get to you. We'll talk about it. Viktor Frankl, whatever. The fact of the matter is, clearly, once there's nobody else around, for him to react against or have his religious fervor to fight against, all of a sudden, he seems to lose his stamina, and he doesn't do very well at all. It's very disappointing. Now, we have three points of view. Why did he choose to have nothing to do with them? Lost cause? He wanted to no skill set because his whole religious lifestyle or way of being was to react against them. Now let's get to the answer we all knew when we started. He should have. It was wrong. He should have tried. Let's get to the title of the shiur already. Okay? Source number 6. Devarim Rabbah. Noach amar l'Moshe, ani gadol mimcha, shenitzalti midor hamabul, I'm better than you, because I was saved from the door of the flood. Amar l'Moshe, ani nitaliti yoter mimcha, I'm superior from you. Ata hitzalta ele atzmacha, v'lo haya b'cha koach lahatzil et dorcha, aval ani hitzalti et atzmi, Behitzalti et Tori, Kishinit Chaivu, Klaya Ba'egel. You saved yourself, but you didn't have the power to save your generation. But I saved myself and I saved my generation when they were deserved destruction by the sin of the Egel. Minayin, Shene Emar. Where do we learn this? From the pasuk that says, top of page 2, Vayinachem Hashem al hara'a asher diber la'asot lamo. God chose not to do the bad that he said he was going to do to his nation. In Shmos Perek Lamabeth, the Ego Perek. L'ma ha'davar domet, to what can this be compared? L'shtei sfinot shayu bayam, to two ships that were in the sea. V'hayu b'tochan shnei kavrinitin, and in them were two captains. Echad hitzil et atzmo, v'lo hitzil et sfinato. These words are clearly very relevant considering what happened last year. One saved himself and didn't save his ship. Echad hitzil et atzmo ve'et sfinato. One saved himself and his ship. L'mi hayu mikhalsin, lo toshe hitzil et atzmo. Not to the one who saved himself. That's Finoto, and but not his ship. Kach Noach lo hitzil el atzma, just like Noach who only saved himself. Aval Moshe hitzil et atzma v'etzaro. Moshe saved himself and his generation. Hevei v'at alit al kulana, and that's where we get the idea. You rose above everyone else. So in terms of the fact that this conversation starts the way it does. If you'll notice, the way I started the Midrash was with three dots. That's because this is in the middle of a whole long Midrash where Moshe, at the end of his life, is having conversations with a lot of people. Right before Noach, he has a conversation with Adam. After Noach, he has a conversation with Avram and Yaakov, etc. This is the conversation snapshot with Noah. The fact that Noah and Moshe's conversation chooses to be in this form, I believe, is just the way the Midrash chose to write it this way, as a stylistic thing. Nevertheless, the Midrash is clearly very critical of Noah and thinks, look how great I am. Everybody else was destroyed, but I'm clearly on a very high level that I was saved. And Moshe is trying to point out that, I'm sorry, but what about everybody else? You were supposed to do something for them, and you didn't do anything for them. My generation was supposed to be destroyed, but I saved them. And if you look at source number 8, there's a chart where you could see that the comparison is based on very similar words. The first box is not so surprising. In the Noach side on the right, when Hashem says, Lenoach, Kates Kol Basar Balpanai, the end of every man has come before me, Hinini Mashlitim Et Aretz, I'm going to destroy the land. Hashem says to Moshe, Lech Reki Shichet Amcha, your nation has, corrupted itself, destroyed itself, and Hashem says, I'm going to destroy them. In Noach and Pasuk Yichet back on the right, Hakimoti Ebriti Itach, I'm going to keep my covenant with you. Ubata El Hateva, you can go into the ark. Back onto the left with Moshe, Pasuk Yud, Atahanichali, leave me alone, Bichara Pi, so I can be angry by him, Bachalam, and destroy them. Veseot Chalagoy Gadol, now I'm going to make you into a great nation. What does Noach respond to that with? Zilch. What does Moshe respond to that in the second box on the left? Why are you going to be angry at them? Don't do this. And then what happens, and here's where I think the parallel language is so powerful, in the third box, you see that what did Hashem do in response to Moshe? Vayinachem Hashem al ra'ah. Hashem decided not to. He was appeased and chose not to do the bad. And where do you see that language in the Noah story when God chose to regret making man and decide to destroy them? And I think that contrast, that irony, is very powerful. It really emphasizes the fact that Noah didn't daven on their behalf, and therefore that same verb, which by Moshe saved the people, is used by Noah to stamp their destruction. And in Dvarim, Rabbah, it's very clear that they're very critical of him. And I think that in Sefer Yeshayahu, in source number 10, the Zohar, which I didn't bring because it's in Aramaic, I'm not good with that language, comments on the fact that the way they call the Mabul, Ki Mei Noach Zotli, the waters of Noach, these are to me. Why do they call them Mei Noach? Because whose fault are they that the flood came? Noach's, the Zohar says. Because he might have or should have tried to stop them. And Dvarim Rabba is very critical of the fact that he didn't. And I think that there are a lot of different ways to understand his relationship with his generation. Looking at them as a lost cause, thinking he doesn't have the skill set, thinking that you can feed off the differences in order to be religiously strong. Even if all those things are true, I still think, and the reason why I ended with this point of view, is because the thing I think we should take away from is Ki Mei Noach Zotli. He still should have tried. And there's another Zohar that compares Noach to Abraham, to Moshe, three people that have been compared at different points in the Shir. And it says Noach didn't daven for anybody. Avram davened for the righteous. Moshe davened for the sinners. because they'd done Chayta Egel. And therefore, out of the three, Moshe really did the best. And I think that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by sinas chinam, baseless hatred. And I think that as Jewish people, there are a lot of different ways of being Jews today and keeping halacha today. And unfortunately for you, I'm in front of the pulpit, so you have to hear what I have to say. Which is that somebody's got to be the bigger person. And somebody's, you know, got to be the humbler person first. And it's harder and whatever. But the bottom line is, whether we're reaching out to the sinners, or the nicer way to say it is the Tinok Shenishbas, intermarriage is at the highest rate ever. And even if we don't think we have the skill set, even if we think they're a lost cause, even if some of us think we, you know our identity stronger because of who they are, I don't think it's okay not to try. And I think that even if we're all different and think halacha's different and not getting along, I think we all have to try to make it work and reach out to everybody, no matter who they are and how they're seeing things. Because if we want that Beis HaMikdash built and Mashiach to come, then let's learn from Noach and know it doesn't matter how good the reasons and how much they make sense. We're supposed to try. Thank you. If anyone has any questions, please don't hesitate to come up.
I once made up a button that said, "Sock it to me."